On your agenda, as you can see, item W is deferred to a future Judicial Council business meeting. Brings us to item X. This is the public access to judicial administrative records, AOC policy and procedures for responding to requests for information and records under Rule 10.500. This is an action item. We have presenting the Honorable Judith Ashman Gerst, the Honorable Harry Hull, and Mr. Chad Finke.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, members of the council. What we're going to do this morning, not quite afternoon, is that Chad's going to give you some of the background of the origin of Rule of Court 10500. Justice Hull is going to discuss what the interim process has been. I'm then going to talk about the proposed policy document itself.
Did you want to say anything?
Did you want to start?
No, that's fine, but I'll go however the two of you would like to have. I could give some introductory comments just to give the council some perspective as to how we've come to this item today. As many of you know, the employees of the Administrative Office of the Courts have long received requests from both trial and appellate courts for advice and assistance and information relating to matters relating to ongoing court trial and appellate court operations. And the AOC, by my understanding, has always tried to be responsive and to be helpful with those requests. Last spring, at least as far as my knowledge goes, and perhaps before, it became known to some of us on the council that the AOC did not really know how to handle some of the requests that had been coming to them and how to respond to certain requests. Specifically, the AOC was receiving requests that asked for explanations, indeed in many cases justifications, for council and AOC policies. There are some examples in the staff report. I'll refer to a couple of them to give you, to remind you the types of requests that became very difficult for AOC employees to know how to respond to. One, for instance, said, quoting, "How much do Warren," that would be former AOC judge in residence Roger Warren, "and Edwards," being former AOC judge in residence the Honorable Leonard Edwards, "actually work? 1 week per month, 2 weeks. I notice Warren's salary is now listed as about one half what it was listed in 2009, but I've heard he works 1 day per month." A second example, "Was there ever any raise, pay increase, pay modification, hourly wage increase, or wage modification given to lessen, reduce, or eliminate the true financial impact of furlough days on AOC employees?" There's another example there that I'll address momentarily. As I've said, it was difficult for the AOC employees to know how to answer requests for information such as that. There was an additional concern on their part, which I'm sure we would all share had we been in their position, and that is that these requests were coming from judicial officers for explanations of policies and other decisions that the employees had no hand in and, frankly, probably no knowledge of at the time that the requests were received. In addition to that, it turned out that the staff time that was being spent on requests such as this was becoming, to say the least, somewhat burdensome. I think Mr. Finke had some figures for us at some point. Do you have those today,
sir?
Are you going to refer to those?
I do. I can talk about them now, or I can...
I'll just wait. I can just wait until we get to that. That's fine. A number of us, when we became aware of this, were trying to figure out how to handle such requests, and we talked the matter over. And initially, and this is the interim program, if you will, that we've been following, felt that certain requests, such as these, should not be directed to AOC employees, but instead to members of the council, and preferably given the office of the requesters to a judge. I volunteered to be the contact person for that purpose, and that that offer was accepted. And so since about early August, I've had referred to me, I would say approximately 6 to 8 such requests to which I have replied. And again, by way of example, I had one request from a judicial officer. Actually, Ms. Roberts had one request from a judicial officer that was referred to me that said, quote, "I note that the minutes of each council meeting began with a recitation of, quote, council members present, close quote, quote, advisory members present, close quote, and others present, in quotes. I further note that the administrative director is listed among council members present rather than under others present or advisory members present. The director of AOC is not a member of the Judicial Council and never has been. Why is the director listed among the council members?" I was able to refer the requesting judge to Rule 10.1, Subdivision D of the California Rules of Court that says the administrative office of the court supports the council in performing its functions. The administrative director is the secretary of the Judicial Council. And Rule 10.2, Subdivision B, specifically B4, that says the administrative director of the courts is the secretary to the Judicial Council and performs administrative and policymaking functions as provided by the Constitution and the laws of the state of California, and is delegated by the Judicial Council of and the Chief Justice. The secretary is not a voting member of the council. In the hopes that that would clarify the matter for the person making the request. There was a second request that I responded to in September, noting that there had been a request to Mr. Finke that also was conveyed to Justice Miller on a Sunday afternoon, relating to the actions the Judicial Council had taken the previous week in approving and implementing the recommendations of the Executive and Planning Committee, which dealt with the reorganization of the AOC. I was able at that time to respond to that request and provide the requester the links to the Judicial Council action discussions of the previous week relating to restructuring of the AOC, and also a link to the PowerPoint presentation used at the Judicial Council meeting as it related to that restructuring. A third example, going back to August, a judicial officer had sent a request to Ms. Patel saying as follows: "On July 18th, I sent a straightforward email to Ms. Hershkowitz as set forth below. The only contact I have received is the automated out-of-office reply. I am not the only one having problems getting timely and candid responses from your staff." Referring to another judge, had great difficulty obtaining a response from Mr. Child regarding his lobbying efforts against the amendments to Government Code Section 68085, which the Chief Justice says she did not oppose. In fact, he didn't respond until you apparently intervened, referring, I suppose, to me. And then his answer was wholly non-responsive. No, I think that was referring to Ms. Patel. And then his answer was wholly non-responsive. Continuing and quoting, "That's the question, all in capital letters, did the council, chief, or all in capital letters, anyone else, tell him to lobby against the charge of changes to Government Code Section 68085, and did he, in fact, do so?" I took this as an allegation of inappropriate conduct by Mr. Child and Ms. Hershkowitz in not following either the chief's or the council's lead on this issue, and I told the judge that I would look into it. I did look into it, and I determined that there had been no inappropriate comment by either of those AOC employees, and I so informed the judge. It became apparent by this time that in light of the nature of the requests, these sort of hybrid requests, that perhaps we needed to come up with some policy clarifications for AOC employees, especially for requests that that came in some form that might ask for documents, but many of which did not. And at that time, Justice Ashman Gerst and Judge Herman and Judge O'Malley, both of which were on the original 10-500 committee, and Mr. Finke and me, in a much lesser role, got together to consider a policy proposal to place before you, which turns out to be today. I'll finish by saying, and then I'll turn the matters over to Justice Ashman Gerst and Mr. Finke, that the proposed policy and the responses that we have made have not been based on anything other than certainly are not an effort to restrict or make more difficult requests for information, but to provide guidance to AOC employees who receive the types of requests to which I have referred so that they will better know how to handle them. And with that, Justice Ashman.
Thank you. So just, again, as Justice Hull said, the same time that we started getting the increased requests and staff was being reduced, the chief asked Judge Herman, Judge O'Malley, and myself to review the policy and procedures and to come up with a clear and concise policy for the staff to follow. We included Chad. We included Justice Hull. Judge Jarre was included. Mary Roberts was. Peter Allen. And others, as we felt was appropriate, to really come up with an appropriate policy that was easy to follow, a guide for handling requests that, and I have to stress this, these are not within 10-500. These are the other kinds of requests. And then we'll go into those in a little bit of detail because that's what's in the policy. So Chad's going to give you a little bit more background.
Thank you. Thanks, Chief, and thanks, members of the council. A lot of the background, I think, has already been touched on, but just so that you know sort of why I'm involved in this, my office is in charge of administering the agency-wide responses to 10-500 requests that come in. We also do it on behalf of all the appellate courts. I think what Justice Ashman Gerst just said is really important, which is this policy that is before you today is meant to run parallel to 10.500. It's not in any way intended to modify or amend 10.500, nor to alter the way that staff currently handle requests for judicial administrative records under that rule. We have, if you look at the policy, you'll see there are a couple places where it directs staff to, via hyperlink, if you determine this is a judicial administrative records request, do what you've already been doing. And we have extensive documentation on our intranet to guide staff in how to respond to those requests. So 10-500, I think, as you all know, was adopted by the council in December of 2009. It went into effect January 1 of 2010. And for the first about year and a half, as staff were getting requests under that rule, I don't know that we really had it in our head to differentiate between these sort of informational type requests and judicial administrative records requests. We just, you know, tried to answer everything that came in, whether it called for documents or a narrative response or what have you. And then, as Justice Hull has pointed out, at some point or another, not only did the amount of time become an issue, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but the issue sort of came up, is this really appropriate for staff to be responding to these types of questions? And so that was in sort of mid-2012 that we started having that discussion. And you, those of you who were on the council at the time may remember it was October of 2011, I was given direction, I believe it was by Justice Miller as chair of E&P, and to pass along to all staff that in responding to requests under the rule, we should interpret that rule narrowly, and not sort of go beyond the requirements of the rule in responding. But again, at that time, which was late 2011, I don't know that we as staff had firmly in our minds the distinction between these informational type requests and record requests. So we sort of interpreted that more as, okay, don't create new records, which the rule already talks about and the like. But I don't think we were completely clear yet on just how different these sort of informational type requests are. And so, hence the development of this policy, starting sort of with the interim procedure that Justice Hull talked about, and then the new policy that's before you now. Just by way of numbers, and this is reported, it's in the report itself, although I went through and re-added the numbers right before this presentation, and either I did my math wrong or I hit the wrong key in typing the report, because the report represents 734.7. When I redid the math, I came up with 733.7. So I just want to make sure the record's clear, that, you know, I'm not trying to play games with numbers. It's one or the other, and I can redo the math after this. But how we got there is when we got to mid-2012, and as we were downsizing and really, you know, under Jody's direction and Kurt Soderlund's taking a look at what we were expending staff time on and trying to reorganize the AOC, we became concerned about the amount of staff time that we were spending on all requests, not just informational, but 10-500 requests as well. And so Jody directed all of the division directors to basically audit staff hours for June and July, so keep a careful tab, not just of total hours, but by staff person, so that we would know, you know, not only, okay, how many total hours, for example, is my division spending on these, but whose hours are they? You know, is it at the administrative level? Is it at the analyst level? Is it at management, division director? And so we did that for June and July, and we kept pretty careful records, and that's where we came up with this total figure of either 733.7 or 734.7. At that time, again, that was for everything. So that was for 10-500s. It was for informational requests that we hadn't yet begun referring to Justice Hall, and it was for the hybrids, which are the ones that are sort of a blend of the two. You know, you'll see in the report that staff has estimated that we think of the 734.7 that probably about 45% of those were either straight information requests or the hybrid type. So they did have some, you know, about half of those hours, probably a little less than half, in some way involve staff trying to deal with these questions that ask for information as opposed to just asking for records, which we can then, you know, we have procedures for identifying and producing records. So it was against that backdrop then that the chief put into place Justice Hall in the interim, and then I was directed to work with other AOCers to prepare the policy that's before you today.
So what the policy does, the first thing we did in our discussion is try to identify the type of request and determine that they generally are going to fall into four different categories. One is the request for judicial administrative records under 10-500, and nothing changes about those. The next is requests for basic programmatic or process information that may not be involved in or embodied in judicial administrative records but are important, particularly for judges in going about their business. And, you know, an example of that might be how far in advance of his or her preferred starting date for serving on assignment should a retiring judge submit the application? Or how long does it take typically to process a compensation claim for a panel attorney? The kinds of things that we as judges really need to know. And, again, there's no change in those kinds of requests, and they go just according to the policy of each office or division. The requests that require an explanation or a decision of policy making or is otherwise inappropriate for staff to answer is what the policy attempts to focus on. And we really felt it was important to divide that up by the kind of requester, because once again, judicial officers have important needs. And so we divided it by judicial officers, by members of the council advisory committees, media, which would go to Peter Allen's group, executive and legislative requests that would go to OGA, and then the general public. And you can see from the policy how we divided that and where it ought to go. The most complicated, of course, was the hybrid requests, and those were the requests that asked some aspects that are judicial administrative records and some that are not. And so what we've done is ask staff to try to parse those. And those aspects of the request that can be answered pursuant to 10-500, fine, go ahead. And those that cannot be answered that way, again, should go under this the policy that includes Justice Hall. Bottom line is the goal was to give direction and staff consistency. and ensure that there was consistency throughout the AOC. And that was our whole purpose in this. We had many phone conversations on it, many conference calls, lots of emails back and forth. We studied this from August through now, and this is the policy that we have suggested. And I would ask if either Judge Herman or Judge O'Malley have anything that they would like to ask, because they were involved in the original implementation of 10-500, so they can perhaps have some insight for us.
Go ahead, Judge O'Malley.
Judge Herman and I were involved in that committee. I wouldn't say that I was the chair of that committee, but I think I helped lead the discussions of the committee. And we worked very hard in creating and forwarding to the Judicial Council a rule of court with regard to public access to judicial administrative records. We worked with legislative staff, First Amendment folks, other interested parties very hard to adopt a rule of court acceptable to all interested parties. Since its adoption, what I have seen through Chad and the requests that have been received through the AOC is a number of requests that simply do not fall within the purview of 10-500. They're a hybrid type of request. So part of it might not, and there are many, many requests that simply were completely outside the rule of 10-500. These requests, when posed to staff, were really difficult to determine. And when, for instance, it's coming from another judicial officer, you know, I mean, it really puts staff in a very awkward position of how do we deal with it? And they did try and deal with it for months and months and months. And it wasn't until we were realizing the hundreds of hours that were being expended in answering the types of requests that we were seeing that were, I mean, honestly, some people have a lot of time on their hands. I do not. But it was amazing what it was they were asking for. Some I found to be possibly legitimate requests, and some I could not see any logic whatsoever in the request, especially the logic in expending the number of staff hours that was required to answer these requests. And so it got to the point of absurdity. It really did. And when it reached that point, then we formed this committee. I mean, there had to be some action taken because you couldn't continue doing what we were doing, especially with the realignment of the AOC. The staff was going down. They just didn't have the time to be able to invest in these types of requests. So we really did. We went through all of these requests, and the packet was quite extensive. And I think at some point, you know, council members may have had a brief look at that particular packet. And again, I mean, by looking at the nodding heads around the council table, you just know what it was that Chad and his staff were dealing with. And so it was very important that we needed to establish a policy not to restrict access to the records, judicial administrative records, that everybody has a right to. That was certainly not the purpose. The purpose was to assist staff in identifying what type of request this is. And in identifying the type of request it is, then you can go forward with compliance. And you can give them, you know, the parts of the or comply with records that are easily obtainable and accessible and can be turned over. And then on other policy issues, or why do you address a person at a judicial council meeting in such a way, and why do you introduce them? I mean, again, that's not for staff to say. And so those had to be given. Staff had to be given direction. You know, if they just answered part of the question, then they were in fear of offending, you know, the party who asked for the information. And again, they shouldn't be put in that position. And so we had to give them an avenue, a direction, some guidance with how you handle the rest of the question that you have no business answering. And so that's what this policy is about. This policy is about helping staff to more easily identify the type of request it is, and then because of we identified who it's from, because those who it's from can go to a different entity to help answer the question if it can be answered more expeditiously. It's not to say, oh, it's a judge, or it's this particular judge, or it's this judge from this court, and so we're going to stonewall this. That wasn't the purpose at all. The purpose is to help expedite the process. And if it's something from the legislature, it's going to go to OGA because they've answered those questions for years and years and years, and that's the right place for that to go. And if it's something that somebody from the council should answer, Justice Hull or anybody else, any one of our committee, then that's where it should go. So, again, this was designed to assist staff in dealing with these issues more correctly, more expeditiously, so that we could deal with what we were being inundated with. And so that's my two cents. Thank you. And hope that we adopt this policy.
Judge Herman?
Yeah, I would just concur in all of the comments. And the real emphasis here is this is not in any way an alteration of 10500, which, again, a lot of work was put into with all of the stakeholders to assure that we had both an identification of records that were the public is absolutely entitled to, as well as the procedure to get access to those records. And so this really does merely address those requests that are outside of 10500 and to give all of the staff across the board a clear understanding of how to triage or address those various requests.
Thank you. Judge Jacobson, then Judge Rosenberg.
These guidelines are reasonable in that they give staff the guidance that staff deserves. It promotes clarity and consistency, and I therefore move to adopt
second
recommendation.
Second by Jim Fox, and I'll also hear from Judge Rosenberg, then Judge Moss, I believe. Did you have your hand up? No, then Justice Miller.
You know, when I first got into this subject, I guess it was last year, I thought we were really just dealing with 10500. And as I learn more about this, it's really about 10500 and everything other than 10500. And as I understand it, we're really not changing anything with regard to Rule 10500. People make a request for records. They get the records pursuant to the rule. What we've been struggling with is all these other requests that are either not 10500 requests or some sort of hybrid. A little of this and a little of that. And so this whole discussion has gone well beyond 10500. I agree that this is a very thoughtful and very balanced approach, and it will really work. Here's my concern. The numbers you've indicated about staff time are, frankly, very troubling. In light of increased workload and reduced staff that we have. Under this new approach, has there been any evaluation in terms of FTE, full-time equivalents of staff that might be expended in dealing with these requests? I mean, are we talking about effectively a full-time or two full-time staff members in the course of a year?
And just to make sure I understand, Judge, you mean if the new policy were adopted?
Yes.
We haven't, no. To answer your question succinctly, no. But I can tell you that I feel very confident it will be less staff time than now, because where the time really comes in is staff attempting to figure out substantively how to respond.
Okay.
And so since that burden is being removed from staff under the policy, the only time will be the time that it takes to evaluate, see that, okay, this is not a staff-appropriate issue, and refer it on to Justice Hall or whomever the chief appoints.
So then let me ask one final question. Let's assume you get a request in the future that says something like, why did the Judicial Council approve a standalone office of security? Clearly not a 10500 request.
Right.
You would send that request to Justice Hull or whoever is designated, and then what would they do with it?
Well, that I guess I'll defer to Justice Hull on that one.
I think as Judge O'Malley said, that we want to continue to honor requests. There's a tension here. I don't think that either I or members of the council or members of the various advisory committees can afford to spend a great deal of time in answering inquiries as to why the council decided to keep an Office of Court Security, and so I think we're just going to have to take it a request at a time and do the best we can with it, which is what I've been trying to do since August.
I would just add that obviously if there's a written document
right.
dealing with it, that comes within 10500, we'd be happy to provide the document.
Or on that example, even the audio recording of the council discussion.
Right. Or right. just give him Jim Bramlin's phone number.
Right.
Yeah. Wait, there's an order here. Okay, so after Rosenbrook was Justice Miller, then Angela Davis, then Ira.
And it doesn't change anything about the policy or the process, correct, Chad? To if it can reasonably be recast into a records request.
I no, mean, that's
if,
right.
If the statement is inartfully written, but it can be reasonably recast into a request for a particular document or documents, that'll be taken
no,
care
that,
of initially under 1050.
That's absolutely right. I'll use Judge Rosenberg's as an example. Well, if we received that request, why did the council do X, approve it? The first thing we would do is, we would check to see, are there any records that answer that question? So we don't just sort of look at the phraseology of the question and say, well, that's a why question, not a give us a documents question. So, no, that's the, kind of what drives the number of hours is because we do look at that. We, regardless of exactly how it's set up, we think, okay, are there any judicial administrative records that would answer that? And if so, we provide them, presuming that, you know, they're not subject to any basis for non-disclosure. So no, right, none of that would be changed. It's just that when we get to the point where we think there are no judicial administrative records that answer this, but the requester is still demanding an answer, rather than staff try to craft some answer, the reference would be made up.
Thank you.
Angela Davis.
So I agree that this is a really good policy, and I vividly remember the meeting when we went over a two-inch stack of inquiries, and it's obviously necessary, especially with the reductions in AOC staff. There were two things that I just wanted to bring up. One is that a lot of the inquiries that are non-10500 are, however you want to characterize the motivations behind them, the underlying question is designed to expose inefficiencies or waste or perceived inefficiencies or waste at the AOC. And I just think particularly given the climate in which all of us are working and the efforts to overhaul AOC, I think the requests themselves at a minimum need to go to the executive office, even though they're going to be resolved and responded to through this consultative process, you know, with the different staff divisions and the consultants as outlined in the policy. That was kind of my first thought. My second thought is that I noticed that for non-10500 requests from the media, our media office under this policy will be responding to those, but there is not a consultation requirement for the media. And it just occurs to me, given some events over the past year or two, media is a pretty broad category. And there was an incident about a year and a half ago where a television station requested expense reports. And the way that the expense reports were packaged up I don't know who did it, but the way that they were packaged and delivered to the media outlet that requested them, they were a little bit ambiguous, and they did give the impression that AOC and Judicial Council was reimbursing expensive restaurants and alcohol. And it's my view that that could and should have been handled differently, perhaps with a cover letter and with the participation of our executive office, to get in front of what was obviously an issue and, you know, an intent to expose something and explain exactly how those expense reports were handled and how that it was a statutory per diem despite the inclusion of receipts for other things in the records that are maintained. So, I mean, I would just suggest that with non-10500 requests going to the media, that the media respond to those requests after consulting with, at a minimum, the executive office.
Thank you. Ira Kaufman, Judge Kaufman.
Yeah, I agree with what you're doing. The only thing is that we have a First Amendment right, and we have a right to be responsive. I was just going to ask that we come back in a period of time, whether it's 90 days, 180 days, and have a report back saying, how is this policy really working? And also saying that, is there any pushback in the sense that people are not satisfied, they're not getting what they think they should get? I think This is a new policy. I think we as a judicial council should have some oversight to see that it really is working. And also hearing from Chad and staff, is it making their job easier or harder? Whatever. Let's review what we have and let's move on.
Thank you. Judge Herman.
I would just add that I think Judge O'Malley is being too modest in terms of what really was leadership within the 10500 committee, and that committee worked long and hard and particularly focused on the issue of the unsophisticated public requester of information from the court to design a process where we could come together in terms of what information they were really seeking and then provide what information was available to answer their inquiry from a quote-unquote administrative record. So that process is already built into 10500, and it's only when that process is exhausted, so to speak, and the requests are clearly either outside or a hybrid request relative to 10500 that the staff would have the guidance on this policy to triage those requests and place them where they're appropriately responded to one way or another.
Thank you. You know, I want to add one thing that I'm not sure has been completely covered by this, but that the 2 months and the 733 hours are quite conservative, and that this has been an issue not only with Chad's group, but there was a period of time, and most recently, where requests of hybrid, of all three types, of 10500 and hybrid, would come into multiple people at different times. With the same kernel phraseology of question, but it would go to OGA, it would go to a judge, it would come to me, and we spent many, many hours trying to figure out who should respond and what they were looking for, and you know, were we being timely under the rule? And there were many discussions about staff time until there was the decision to start to chart it in order so that we could get a handle on how to adequately staff these requests. And it was all in an effort to try to get the information out, the good faith effort to try to respond to a lot of these questions, and some of which, frankly, are embedded in policy that's decades old, that were efforts made to try to provide that information. So I think the guidelines, the policy is, as recommended, is very helpful, especially with a report back to find out if we've been able to actually do as well as we can in responding to requests and using our time efficiently in our new environment of fiscal austerity and trying to be accurate as well. I mean, we want to be accurate, and we don't want to create more requests by our response, which sometimes happened in certain instances. So,
Chief. Your comments just raised a question, if I can ask. Chad, if there are multiple requests that come in, similar requests going to four or five different people, does the staff at the AOC know that you are the clearinghouse, that they all have to funnel them to you?
They do now. Okay. But as we were developing this kind of in mid-2012, that, as the chief pointed out, that was sort of part of the issue, is because these weren't 10500 requests, I think staff in some divisions weren't quite sure. So some folks would say, well, that seems like something we should send to Finke, so send it on. And then others would say, well, no, they're not asking for documents, so I guess we better just respond to it. So I think this will hopefully eliminate the possibility of, you know, multiple responses that may be, you know, inconsistent.
Where are we on the status of the motion?
It's been moved and seconded.
Do we want to amend the report back, or we don't need that as part of
No. You want to accept the friendly amendment?
I would accept the friendly amendment.
As would I.
Maybe in 6 months, something.
6 months.
Six months.
180 days.
Okay.
All in favor?
Or six.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for this thoughtful policy. I believe that concludes our business agenda. We conclude with a brief remembrance of our judicial colleagues recently deceased, the Honorable Rinaldo Shapiro, Superior Court of Los Angeles County, the Honorable Walter Harrington, Superior Court of San Mateo County. Both were retired from the bench. We honor them for their cause for their dedication to the cause of justice, their dedication. The next Judicial Council meeting is scheduled for January 17. I want to thank all of our council members, our advisory committees, our task forces, working group members, all AOC staff for their continued excellence in supporting the Judicial Council. Happy holidays, safe travels. I look forward to a productive and active 2013. Meeting is adjourned.